Now, on this morning's Wellness Wednesday, we talked to Karen Doherty, a woman's health dietitian. Good morning, Karen. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. And we're talking ahead of an event towards the end of January. You're holding a Femme Menopause Retreat with a number of speakers, and there's tips and workshops on the day, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But it was through your own health, your own medical experiences, is it that you took an interest, more of an interest in this area, and also the connection, I suppose, between what we eat and its impacts and advantages for us?
Well, absolutely, Greg. My background is as a registered dietitian. I've nearly three decades done. I suppose my background when it comes to women's health really started with my own health, as I was 1 year post qualifying, and I was diagnosed with grade 2 endometriosis. And I was lucky enough back in the millennium, 2000, to be treated with a standard surgical treatment and to have hormone treatment. And I worked at that time quite quietly through it because it was just about keeping my head down, continuing on with my career. And I was quite lucky that with the amount of treatments that I had, that I was successfully able to have children. But it wasn't until, I suppose, COVID hit, the great COVID, that things, I suppose, there was new courses that became available, and it was the new research that came out from Australia in Monash. It's a research unit in Melbourne, Australia, which identified, like, why are so many people getting gut health issues? Why do so many people have irritable bowel syndrome? You know, if you look back 30 years ago, there wasn't the same stats as there is now. And at that time, I was going through that course and I was going, gosh, you know, there's a lot of similarities to this in endometriosis. And it wasn't until I finished that course that they seen that there was the first link between diet and endometriosis, where they seen that people would have got an improved quality of life and a reduction in their symptoms of endometriosis by following this FODMAP diet.
Yeah, and it was also under your own roof as well, too, that this was driven home for you, wasn't it? Because your diagnosis goes back to 2000. And before we actually fast forward, endometriosis, and it's thanks to some people who have spoken very publicly about this, a lot of women are saying, actually, you know, this might be what I have, and they're getting earlier diagnoses. And I think, you know, they're aware of the different treatment options, and I think have more control about it. But it's far more prevalent, I think, than people may have realised, certainly back at the turn of the century. Is that something that you recognise? And were you fortuitous or persistent in getting your diagnosis when you did?
I was continuing. I suppose I've heard so many women on your show talk about that, and I think every woman can take away the same, I suppose, story that, you know, that is my story, where you've gone around in a circle, you've been told consistently it's all in your head, what you have is quite normal. But in reality, I mean, science, I suppose women's health and science has only been recognised, I suppose, in the last 2 years, in that endometriosis is as common as diabetes and asthma. Mm. So if you put 10 women into a room, nine women into a room, one of those nine women will have endometriosis. Some are quite symptomatic. Others don't even know that they have it. And it isn't until women start really planning their pregnancies or trying for children that then this is when these tests are done. And sometimes it can be too late for women to have children. And we all know women, if we look left and right, that have gone for fertility treatment, IVF. When really, if you take a step back, it should have been that the diagnosis should have been done earlier to maintain fertility and protect ovarian health.
Yeah, indeed. And just whilst you mentioned something a little earlier on about the prevalence of bowel issues, I saw statistics in relation to that, and I was looked at them. I thought, that must be wrong. I don't know if it's if they're not counted correctly, or people have bowel conditions like really quite serious, Crohn's or whatever it might be, and aren't getting treatment for it, but the amount of people I know from different areas and different groups that have one form or other of a bowel condition, it makes me question the actual statistics having a relation to that, because I think it's far more common, at least in the Northwest where I know people.
Well, I think there's an increase in certainly in bowel conditions, certainly overall. And I think we've seen a complete peak between the ages of, I think, 25 to 45. And I think they're really investigating that. They don't have the answers right now. And I think, I suppose, taking a step back, is it coming down to our diet, our lifestyles, stress management?
I suspect it's... I do suspect...
Nobody really has the answers.
I suspect it's diet, because when you see the types of food, very rich in potatoes, bread, pasta, it seems to be... As I say, I'm speaking completely anecdotally. We'll get to that again. Now, I just want to go back a couple of questions as to where we were going. And that was your experience 25-odd years ago, and that of your daughter, because you've said it publicly, so I'm not being nosy. Your daughter started showing symptoms of endometriosis, which put everything, I presume, in a different focus for you. And I think that's our big step as to where we're at now.
Absolutely. I suppose when you have your own health journey, you just get through it and you just put your head down. But it wasn't until my daughter, who at that time, which was last year, 17, wasn't able to make school because she had the persistent symptoms of just passing out with chronic pain, would have had really low iron levels, just wasn't able to kind of keep her own iron levels up because of just of heavy periods. At that particular time, she was at risk to be at school, so she was asked not to be at school. When I would bring her into the hospital, they would say, it's normal. When in fact, when you've walked that journey yourself, and even as a healthcare professional, you kind of question yourself, kind of going, gosh, are they right? You kind of take a step back as the mother role. But my gut, pardon the pun, told me otherwise. And I suppose that's when I really kind of started asking questions and started linking in with other women that had gone through that. And when I realised that the surgery that I had, which is the ablation surgery, which is for the audience out there, what ablation surgery really means is that they just go in. So it's just cells that are your uterine cells, which should be in your uterus, but are actually in your pelvis. And what ablation surgery means is that they just literally go in, and it's a bit like spraying weeds. It's just spraying the top of it, but it's not actually getting down into it. So with ablation surgery is the side effects that you can get scar tissue and you can get your body organs which glue together. Mm-hmm. And also every time that you are opened up, essentially, you actually reduce down your ovarian reserve. So it's only a short-term measure, which doesn't help.
And it varies for women too, doesn't it? How long the relief lasts for them. For some, it can be really quite fleeting.
Yeah, so research says that you can get up to 6 months to 18 months. But at that time, even from my mindset, it was like, oh, surgery is the cure. Like, you're just going to cut it out. But it's only until you go through the whole process, you realise, and I suppose, as an adult mind, I started questioning more with my daughter.
Right, and just before we get into you then digging into the nutrition, I'm sorry, because I find this area, it's very important, I think, that we hit on some certain things. And this is the fact that whilst we've progressed, I talked of progress, right? Still, if your daughter didn't have you to advocate for them, she was effectively being told to go home and pull yourself together. So we still actually are some way behind where we need to be at here, because she was lucky to have you.
Really, really behind. And I think that's what angered me. And because I was told that it was in her head, she was actually referred to mental health services saying that it was in her head. And being open-minded, I went, absolutely, let's go for this. And when she was assessed, they were saying, actually, what's wrong with her is chronic pain. I mean, her kidney function wasn't working correctly. She had really low iron. She just wasn't able to physically eat because of really, really bad pain. But it's also because of the way our current services, they don't have the resources or the training at the minute. And I suppose I used my intellect and just by searching and meeting other people, I says, what is the gold standard? I suppose with a science background, and I suppose after doing that course, especially with Australia, and I was very lucky. I mean,
so
you know,
were you able to, you and your daughter together, were you able to make nutritional changes that had that have had a positive impact on her?
After she, when Initially, no, because when you're so absolutely down in your boots, tired, nutritional change is not. I mean, she was gone past. She needed the surgery in order to get those really inflammatory cells removed. But then, when she started to stabilize, yes, it was certain things like removing the fructans out of her diet, which is the short chain carbohydrates. And ironically, from a very young age, she was never able to manage milk. But it wasn't the dairy in the milk or the protein in the milk. It was the lactose. It was the milk sugar, which actually ties in with the whole FODMAPs Monash diet. So there is certainly something there between that and our hormones, the inflammatory cells, and also the nerves that are in our gut, which is, when you think about it, if you get a very bad fright and your stomach, the first thing you feel is this awful pain in your stomach. So you have these huge number of nerve endings in your digestive system. And when they become stimulated with stress, that is called, wait for it, visceral hypersensitivity, which just means that your brain and your gut work in tandem.
Yeah. So now we're into the space where we're talking about, I suppose, nutrition and women's health in general, be it the menopause, be it issues with the gut. We know some women can be more inclined to develop brittle bones, osteoporosis and what have you. This is all stuff that our great creator decided that women had the shoulders to bear, right? Because everything seems to affect you. And then we added insult to industry by insult to injury by sticking men in the front of a lot of these things. But anyway, be that as it may, this is more generally, is it? And we'll talk about the event that's coming up about how your nutrition may not necessarily fix a problem the next day, but if you have a good diet and you understand your body and your relationship between what you put into it and its effect on it, that it will hopefully lessen the impacts of a lot of the stuff that we're talking about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, every food that you take, when it's digested down to its simplest form, it has a biochemical mechanism. And food is digested down 100%, while as opposed to supplements are only digested down 60%. That's assuming that your body works 100%, you know, well. Sorry, I forgot what you asked there. I went off on a tangent.
No problem. No, you didn't, because it talks of your upskilling and creation of NutriDoc and the fact that what you do is about your general health as a woman with all the trials and tribulations you're most likely to face.
Yeah, so one of the things with menopause, and I suppose that's what the whole link with endometriosis is, one of the cures that they said for endometriosis was to have an early hysterectomy, which we now know is not the case. And I suppose I have a lot of women that come into my clinic that have had early hysterectomies. So there's a lot of women out there that have early surgical induced hysterectomies, and that means that they can go into the menopause earlier. And for any woman out there, every woman's going to go through it, no matter who you are, what you are. So from the ages of 45 to 55, you're going to go through this phase, which is called your perimenopause, where your estrogen or your hormone levels start to reduce down. And that has an impact in each one of your body organs, from your brain to your digestive system, to your bone health, to your heart health. And then from 55 to 60, that's when we can go into menopause. So we're more at risk of osteoporosis, which is a fancy word for meaning weak bones. We're more at risk of heart disease because the estrogen has a protective effect on our cholesterol levels. And the other thing is, as I said, is our gut health, is that our gut health can take. So that's that, and our brains. Mm. So that's when we can become more susceptible to things like cancers, to dementia, to stroke, to hypertension, all those lovely things. Mm-hmm. But the good news is that if you get your diet correct, and this is the whole thing about the 80s, 90s, when people think of diet or nutrition, they automatically think of food restriction. That is not the case. When it comes to nutrition, it is about nourishment. It's about nourishment of those body organs. So although you've got these key guidelines, you know, we need to be getting insufficient amounts of calcium, vitamin D or omega-3, what does that mean in terms of, you know, our food?
But it's not really complicated either, because, you know, it's not just women, but we all, many of us, you rub moisturizer on your skin, your external organ, right? The bit you can see. Because it's there, it's obvious, it's to protect it, it's to reduce the lines or wrinkles or to avoid dryness or whatever it might be, right? But we try our best. For some, it works better than others. I'm talking about myself here. So why would we not treat the insides of our body in the same way? That we put into it what it works best with, what's best for that part of your body or the whole body's health. It's a no-brainer.
That, That's a very good thing, that although that we have the time for it, but when you think about most menopausal women or perimenopausal women, when you think of their time in their life, it's a time in their life when either their kids have left home, so it's a new phase and ground, or that they are maybe carers for older parents, or so it's a new phase, it's a new transition in life.
Just when you would expect to be saying, right, I have a bit of me time now. Life chucks the rest of it at you.
And I suppose if that is the case, and this is where women are, and they want to get that bit of information, that's why myself and Dr. Sarah Brennan, the GP, have come together and we have formulated this
Okay.
FEM menopause workshop.
And we're going to talk about that, but I just want to mention too, just if you don't mind me adding on to it, it's just with my conversations with women, and this is why I think it's very important that you advocate for yourself and do the best for yourself. Because I would have spoken to women who believe that they are going through menopause or it started. They've gone to their GP or whomever they're responsible to, and they've been said, no, all the indicators show that, you know, you're not suitable for HRT or menopause hasn't started or fully kicked in or whatever the terminology may be. Trust yourself. Say, right, okay, I know myself it's happening. Obviously, it's not being picked up in the test that they're doing. I need to look after myself through my diet, my nutrition, to make this as easy for me as possible, not to just sit there with the symptoms, being told you don't have it and feeling gaslit or whatever it might be. You have to. This is where you can take control now.
And I think
Yeah, go
that's
ahead.
quite important, because I've met so many women in my clinic that have come in and literally been in tears. And they've said, look, I've been to X, Y, and Z appointments, and they said my bloods are fine. But your symptoms are not based on biochemical data, as in your blood
Yeah.
data. It is based on your symptoms.
And they're burning up, they're sweating at night, they've got all the symptoms of being told they're
Absolutely.
grand, and it
And
must feel
as
terrible.
per the menopause guidelines, that's where you should be, listened to by your healthcare practitioner. And that's why I collaborated with Dr. Sarah Brennan, in that you can get one afternoon where you can get all your questions about HRT, whether it be suitable or not, or what is the alternatives, when and how. And I think that was the big thing, is that I decided to create this. There's nowhere else in Ireland that this is happening. Yes, there's awareness campaigns about what menopause is, but women are at a stage, we know what menopause is. We want to be making the changes now. We need the help now. And the big difficulty is some of us can't even get access to our
Yeah,
GPs. We have to wait 2 weeks.
exactly. So what Karen's referencing there is an event that's taking place on January the 25th. It's between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. It's at the wonderful surroundings of the Shandon Hotel Spa in Dunfanaghy. Now, it's the FEM Menopause Retreat, a lavish escape where you can resolve all your questions in one afternoon. Decent tagline. So what does that all mean then for the participant?
I love the way you smiled and you
It
give a wee
just sounds
chuckle there.
fantastic.
Yeah, so it's a lovely 3-hour workshop where women can come. Now, we've kept the numbers small because I suppose I've nearly got 30 years of doing this. And with small numbers, you can get more interaction. I do have a great presentation that I'm going to give on how to practically get in all those nutrients in within the menopause diet. So that's number one. Number two is that we actually look, how can you protect your bones to stop you getting osteoporosis? How can you protect your heart to stop you from getting heart disease and or stroke? And the big one then is also your gut health. We want to maintain your immune system. I can provide all those details for you. Then where Dr. Sarah Brennan will come in is talking about your HRT. So you're getting that live one-to-one setting in a small group. We also talk about anxiety. So cortisol, we're women, we're holding down the fort, we're working, our cortisol levels are through the roof. When we have high cortisol levels, that means it makes it more difficult for us to lose weight. So this is why we talk about, mindfulness and gentle breathing. So at the end of that workshop, you're going to walk away, you're going to have what is called a smart booklet, which I've designed, so that you're going to have three changes that you can make to your diet. You're going to have three changes that you can protect your heart, your gut health, and maintain good bones. You're going to know exactly what HRT you can or cannot have, and so that you go equipped to your practitioner to get that script. And that if you have a anxiety moment or whatever, that you will have a very good tool that you can reduce that down. And that's all going to help to reduce down the cortisol levels and get you into a good routine for 2025.
Brilliant stuff. And you know, we can track that stuff ourselves. We know what goes into our mouth. We know how it makes our midsection feel. We know what comes out and how often it comes out and when it comes out. So, you know, we'd have the ability to keep a good track on ourselves in this regard too, I presume, to bring it down to its most basic level. But you need to know and that people can get the information from this event. So how do people book or get more information?
Okay, so there is the Shandon Spa website, which they have put it up on their events links page. So if you go into the Shandon Spa website under hotels, click on events and go to the dates, the 29th of January, then the 8th of February and also the 29th of March. And the reason we put on three workshops is because the demand was there prior to Christmas. So that's why I put on those three dates.
Okay, I have an out-of-date out-of-date sheet, which I've dispensed with. It's gone.
Okay. And I also have an Instagram page called @thenutridoctor on Instagram and also on Facebook. And I will be launching my website to www.nutridoc.com. And I'm also listing everything that if people have missed those, that they can ring into the station. Good. And they can get those links.
Okay. Brilliant stuff. Lovely chat. Thanks so much for your time, Karen. Very informative. And as it's amazing, as we every time we have conversations like this, it lands with different people. I wish I'd have known that. This is how I feel. That's what I was told. Every time we have conversations like this, that's why it's so important, because it reaches new ears all the time. Okay, so thank you very much for your help in that regard.
Can I give a big shout out, please, to, there is a group from BT Young Scientists traveling from Loretto Milford.
Yes.
On their way. So they're going to be presenting on Friday, so we wish them the best of luck. So that's to Ava Malloy, Mia Boyce and to Olivia Doherty. They're listening live on the Coach Up.
I wouldn't be surprised if we end up chatting to them on the show. Brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Karen. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
Bye bye. God bless you. Thank you. That's Karen Doherty, women's health dietitian. And as I say, there's a charge on that. It's €109 to be educated and pampered and what have you. Hopefully that's within your price bracket. But you know, at the very least, you just get 3 hours to yourself on your own to chill. All right, it is a Wednesday, so that means we have a first live chat with Chris Ashmore as we look forward to Business Matters after we take a break. We're also, I think, going to be talking Elvis before noon as well. I was going to say he's 90 years dead today. He's 90 today. He would have been 90 today, I think. Anyway, I'll get all that clarified and bring it to you before 12.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by Local Enterprise Office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the Local Enterprise Office to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters, is in studio with me. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
We were just talking about New Year's resolutions, and I opined that it's not a big thing anymore. It doesn't seem that people do. People still make New Year's resolutions. I know it's not a business matter as such, but
no, I don't think you hear about it as much. No.
Used to be, oh, I'm going to give that up, or I'm going to give this up. You don't. Yeah. But publicly, I wonder, do people do? You've made yourself a little New Year's resolution, isn't it?
Yeah, two. One is to try and go to bed earlier and get up earlier. And the other is to get more sleep.
But that's the same. That's not two. That's the same one.
It's all interconnected. Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got one New Year's resolution. Yeah. One New Year's resolution is to get more sleep.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it, Chris, unless you change the other two. You see.
But if you get half an hour more sleep,
yes,
a day, over a week, over a year, it's a lot.
Yeah, but I just can't sleep beyond 6 hours anymore. I don't know what it is.
But your body adapts, doesn't it?
It shouldn't. Yeah. All right, any New Year's resolutions, let us know. The more adventurous, the better. Right, let's get some business news before we preview this week's business podcast. And it's about the value of Ireland's food, drink and horticultural exports. It's an area of growth.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, when it's... Look, we hear all sorts of figures thrown out and sometimes they just go over our heads. But, you know, when you step back and think about it, you know, Ireland exporting last year food, drink and horticulture, a record €17 billion worth. I mean, we're known as the food island. It was up 5%. And commenting on the report, Minister for Agriculture, Food and Marine, Charlie McConnellogue, you know, noting that this is very encouraging. Our dairy exports over 6 billion. Drink is a big thing. Whiskey exports up 13%, more than €1 billion. And we only have to look at the success of the likes of, I suppose, Jameson and so Bailey's much, and well, all the other Irish small distilleries.
Our milk exports are worth...
Well, the total, the dairy exports, 6.3 billion.
And whiskey?
Whiskey over a billion.
Okay. Right,
that's a lot
that
of whiskey.
Probably got to start close.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then you add in seafood, even cereals, mushrooms. We export €90 million of mushrooms a year. Wow. Now, of course, most of that is going to UK multiples. Crabs. I don't have that
prawns.
One in front of me. Prawns. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, absolutely. Seafood. What was it? Up 9%. Seafood, 595 million.
Brilliant. So that's catches so,
and a lot of people in Donegal, of course, employed, and there's a spin-off and processing. So that's all positive.
Indeed. Let's keep supporting them so we can keep doing that. Right. Yeah. Car registrations up for 2024. Or yeah. Are they up? Sorry.
Well, let's look at things nationally. New car registrations for the whole of 2024 were down about 1%. So, not much happening. In Donegal, up about 7%, 2,765 cars were registered in County Donegal last year.
Where is all getting your money, folks, please? Hold on a second. 2,700 people, fair play to you, able to buy a new car last year.
Yeah. Now, there always has to be a certain number of new cars bought every year, obviously. Now, if we go back to the Celtic Tiger times, it was around 3,800.
I think that was my last new car.
So, but it's actually the fourth year in a row that the sales have gone up in Donegal, although, a relatively small increase. But still, the interesting thing, though, is, we're back to the old electric cars again, down by about a third in Donegal last year. So they've... hit a little bit of a roadblock there.
People talk about the affordability of new cars. There's a lovely Kia. I think it's around about €18,000. The Dacia, the Dacia have a new electric car. It's got a range of about 300 kilometres.
Yeah.
I've always, I'm not offering preference on cars, right? But you see the new Dacias, beautiful looking car. They've made some changes to the front and back.
The front looks great, yeah.
And the back's improved as well, too. Really affordable. If I was stepping into a new car, I don't know. There's a lot of different cars out there. Interesting to see what models are making the tops.
The Dacias are actually up 40% in Donegal last year.
It doesn't surprise me. I can see that becoming one of the most, even more so, one of the most popular cars, because I think they've just got their styling right. And as I say, the electric option for under 20 grand, and I think Kia do an under 20 grand one as well.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Yeah. Sorry. So the most popular car, sorry, Chris. You
The top five in Donegal, Toyota led the way last year, Kia second, and the top five, actually, Toyota, Kia, Volkswagen, Skoda, and Hyundai had about 50%.
Hyundai also have Hyundai, it's Hyundai or something. Okay, interesting stuff. Fair play to you. Happy motoring to all of you. All very exciting. 2,700 of you in new cars. And as I say, we've got some amazing dealers right across the county. And I think that's as much a testament to the cars as it is to the numbers is the cars and stuff, because there's big trust there. Right, Leo, they're busy again, 2025.
Yeah, new year, and going to be talking in this in a bit more detail next week's programme, but just a couple of courses coming up that may be of interest to people. There's an Irish for Business course starts on the 21st of January. This is through the Donegal Local Enterprise Office, and a chance for you to develop your Irish and what's relevant to business. We've touched on this before, involving conversational Irish, maybe even it could be your shop sign, and just, how you can enhance things. Also, a food starter program. Now, it's not starting to the 4th of February, but if you want to check it out on the Local Enterprise Office website, a lot of people have great ideas about maybe bringing an old recipe eventually to market, and there's great supports out there. So that food starter program could be well worth having a look at.
Right, you're heading to beautiful Killybegs this week on the podcast, and it's Killybegs Energy.
Yeah, now, very interesting story. Killybegs Energy recently won the Best Startup Award at the Donegal Enterprise Awards. Now, it's a kind of a spin-off from a company called Island Seafoods, established back in the 1980s. Now, they have been involved in seafood, the seafood sector and processing, and have always been to the fore when it comes to sustainability and green energy projects. They have their own hydro plant there. They have a wind turbine. They have fed back into the system. But the latest thing they've set up, Mick and Michael O'Donnell, is Killybegs Energy. And they're producing wood chips, logs and pellets. And what really was the beginning of this, they actually had a bit of surplus electricity. Mm. And they decided, well, let's do something. They had a kiln. They're drying out the logs. There's new EU legislation coming in, Greg, which means if you buy a bag of logs, the moisture content has to be below a certain level, yeah, and the less moisture, the better it's going to burn. So they've latched onto this early stages yet, but going very well, and they hope that in a shop, a petrol station, a bigger outlets, that you'll be buying your typical bag of net of logs, and it'll be from Killybegs Energy. So we can hear in this clip from Michael O'Donnell, the Business Development and Marketing Director.
So there's new legislation that has come into Ireland. It'll be coming in on the 1st of September of this year. So we are producing at the moment wood logs into net bags and into plastic bags. And we also produce industrial wood chip, and that's for pellet or wood boilers. So the pellet thing actually took a back seat because there was so much interest in what we were doing with the wood log and the wood chip. So we have on site a small kiln, a 300 kilowatt kiln, and it puts the wood or the wood log into the kiln, and it brings down the moisture content. The EU legislation now is coming in. The moisture content of wood log is to be 25% and under, and from the 1st of September, that is going to go up to under 20%. So at the moment, with our kiln dried log, we're getting it between 15 and 20% moisture.
One of the big feathers in the West of Ireland's cap, I think, is Ireland West Airport, a.k.a. Knock. I haven't ventured on a plane other than a brief flight to London since before COVID, so my footprint is tiny. I hope to go down and visit them very, very soon. What's the crack down there?
Yes, it's been a record year for Ireland West Airport, which, of course, is used by a lot of people from Donegal, and you're talking over 830,000 passengers went through the airport last year. Some 22 international destinations. Ryanair, Lauda Air, which flies to Spain with charter flights. They also have Aer Lingus. They have a Heathrow link. And, you know, that's very significant. And indeed, Donal Healy, who's head of marketing at Ireland West Airport, touching on that. People from South Donegal, that's business people using that link into Heathrow and obviously the onward connections. So it's continued growth at an airport, which of course, Greg, you are old enough to know that when it all started off, people thought this was a real white elephant.
When was that?
Back in the 80s, Monsignor Horan, the late Monsignor Horan.
So and it was anything in the 80s. I was
it
too
was,
young.
An airport on the top of a bog, and it's been a success
story. Because they
dared
develop something in rural Ireland, you see.
Yes, so they had to believe. So this clip, we can hear a bit more about the passenger figures from Donal Healy.
For the airport to grow, obviously, we have to attract in more and more people, more and more first-time users of the airport. And, you know, typically, Donegal have been a very, very loyal supporter, Donegal people of the airport, and vice versa. As I mentioned to you off air there, Red Sea carried out some recent research and they showed that between 5 and 10% of all overseas visitors who come into the airport actually go and visit Donegal as part of their stay, and indeed stay in the region of on average 6 nights when they come to the airport. So that's, you know, that's a massive contribution to the local Donegal economy. And on the flip side of that, numbers using the airport from the Donegal region are up in the region of about 10%, so between 40 and 50,000 people from Donegal use the airport every year to fly out.
Indeed, I think the last time I used it was a bit of a freebie to Cologne in Germany, which is a beautiful city. It has the big cathedral over there, which is was very severely damaged during World War II, but it sustained its structures because there were so many windows that the explosions passed through the buildings. Mm. It didn't resist them, so the structure remains. It's enormous. It's unbelievable. And also, too, they've got I'm not saying all Germans are the same, right? But they take their clothes off. They like to socialise naked. And there's a cable car ride there as well. And I looked out the window of the cable car, and everyone's stark naked down, walking around in this retreat that they have. Now, you're quite high up. You couldn't really see too much, but... Those were my two highlights of Cologne. Now, there's a big chocolate factory there as well.
Yeah, now the Cologne.
I couldn't see that from the
Cologne
from the car though.
Route from Knock, it's more for German people coming over here, not having to go through Dublin and then get to the west of Ireland, direct access in. And it's been a very successful route. So
yeah, that's just one of the places you can go. Right, so you can hear more from Donal Healy, and also you can hear more from Mick and Michael O'Donnell. Well, you can hear from Michael particularly. They're talking about Killybegs Energy, this is the wonders of the podcast. Maybe a lot of people don't know Killybegs Energy is there, so you get to hear what they're doing and what the plans are for the future, and also the plans for Ireland West Airport, aka Knock. So the podcast is available right now for you to listen on our website in the listen back section, and of course it's live. Pre-recorded, but it's broadcast on the radio scheduled on
Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wishes to get in contact with you, by what means should they?
Email is the easiest, and it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Chris, see you next week.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself, and I hope your New Year's resolution pays dividends. When you're adding half hours up together to get to end of a week, to a month, to a year, I don't think it's... I think you're overthinking it. But anyway, that's grand. Mark McIntyre is known to be an Elvis impersonator, and he joins us on the programme now. Thank you very much, Mark. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Top of the morning to you, Greg, and all the listeners out there.
35 years you've been a fan of Elvis. I presume someone in the household must have introduced you to him, Mark.
35 years... I'm not sure. I'm not good at maths. I remember 1979, I was in boarding school in Fulcara, Holy Cross College. It's long gone now. I used to do Elvis impressions then. I remember the nuns at the time would throw money on the pool table. I'd stand up, jump up on the pool table doing Shake, Rattle and Rolling. And they would throw money at me. And that's my earliest memory doing the Elvis act, you know. But been it a long time. But I do other impressions, Greg, 3 years, you know.
Tina Turner, Daniel O'Donnell. It is quite a broad palette.
Jumping tables, doing Tina Turner, stilettos on, and this kind of crack, you know. And I'm getting a wee bit too old for that now. Put a bit of weight, but I still do the Johnny Cash and people like that, or Ronnie Drew. How are you getting on, Greg? Only feeling. Come on, man. Well, Christy Moore, fair play to Elvis Presley, born at 4:35 a.m. on January 8th, 1935, 90 years ago today. Well, fair play to you. I'm an ordinary man. Well, tell you what, Elvis was no ordinary man for sure, Greg. I tell you for sure. Or Daniel, how you doing? This is Daniel here. Just want to wish, you know, all the Elvis fans, you know, a good celebration of the birth of the king. On this day, 90 years ago. I want to dance. It's a lovely day up here now. You know, the sky's blue after all that day.
That's a good Daniel O'Donnell impression. I'll tell you that for nothing. But it's Elvis 90 today. So what, you and a few mates are heading over to Germany. Funny enough, we were just talking about Germany. You're heading over there because Elvis was resident in Germany for a while.
Yeah. When Elvis was... in the army, Colonel Parker could have pulled a few strings, but no, he sent him off to go to the army as an ordinary soldier during conscription, so October the 1st, 1958. To 1960, Elvis spent 2 years in a place called Bad Nauheim in the army barracks in Friedberg in Germany. So this last number of years, they had a festival in his honour for his birthday in January and also his anniversary of his death in August in Bad Nauheim. So I've been coming there with my mate John Walsh and John Heaney and a crowd of people from the town and that, you know, just it's a change of barstools for some of them, but some of them real big Elvis fans love it, you know. So it's great fun. Music festival, Cadillac shows, girls dressed in all like the 50s dresses, the jive and all the whole history of Elvis, where he walked and, you know, and
who is,
you know,
which Elvis is, if you associate Elvis, right, you know, is it your Giles House Rock? Is it, you know, Suspicious Minds? What era do you, if you had to pick one picture out or one image out sort of Elvis, what is the era that resonates with you most?
Well, I suppose the beginning and the end, really, like the 50s, that's right, Mama, that Sun studio sound, but also like the 70s and the way his voice matured and the whole, you know, I love the gospel. He ran one Grammy Award for his gospel singing. I really dig that, as you say, but yeah, I love his gospel music mostly, and you know, and I think during the 60s, all them films he didn't like to make, he's under contract, you know, but and of course the 68 special is wonderful as well, like, you know, and he kind of, it was like he got himself back on the scene again after making a lot of dreary movies, you know, but it was a lot of things going on, you know, the manager and things like that.
Why
That's a brilliant
think,
film. Is it,
why do you think his popularity has maintained? So, I mean, you know, like, people come and go in life and others sort of persist forever. He will be one of the very few people that will be known by their first name only, that if you say Elvis, you know, I mean, obviously we've got Elvis Costello and others, but he's one of those people that multi-generational people know him by a single name, and he's passed so long ago. Why is, what is it, we're passing it down to generations? I was a huge Elvis fan. All my boys know Elvis, all of them, even Hudson now, he's sitting watching live concerts and stuff. Partly because I want them to love all different types of music, right? Not to be stuck in one genre necessarily. But why is his legacy persisting so?
I think maybe his voice. It's just the Elvis's voice. It's just so much passion and feeling and meaning. And, you know, it's a lot of young people now into Elvis and Johnny Cash and all that, and a lot of that music's come back, and I remember when, you know, the film Elvis was on. Was it 2 years ago now? I went to see it in Leopard's Tavern.
No music in it, really. Cinema,
and there was a 17-year-old guy, Greg, sitting beside me. I didn't know him from Adam. Yeah. And I turned around, what do you think of that? Jesus, class, sir. That was class. It's no wonder my granny loved Elvis. No wonder. he was just totally, you know, fascinated by the whole, you know, the music and the life of Elvis and all that, you know, the rock and roll and, you know, I suppose for many years, you know, the disco scene, nightclubs, people, the way that now that, you know, there's more physical now with the jiving, you're interacting with people, that kind of music. And you see a lot of the country scene has come back so much, you know, and the young people love that. And but for me, mostly is Elvis's voice. And
the funny thing is it's how his voice matured. You mentioned Johnny Cash earlier. The only Johnny Cash I listen to is his later stuff, you know, Hurt, even the version he did of One. I think his version of One is the best version of One there is out there, actually, and other stuff. And Elvis, too, I find myself drawn to his later stuff, the maturity in his voice. But you could see the pain on him on stage. He was bloated. He was sweating. He couldn't get his breath. But my word, could he still sing? Unbelievable. Yeah. His version of Unchained Melody, again, is the best version of Unchained Melody. If you haven't seen it, because it's primarily a video, watch it. The guy is out on his feet. And vocally, it's just an absolute masterclass. Is there anything sort of spiritual to this trip, Mark, or is it a group of lads going over for a bit of crack and you're Elvis fans, you'll meet like-minded people, or does it run a bit deeper for you than that? Answer quickly, because I want to play out with an Elvis song, my friend.
Okay, well, when I first went there to stay in the Elvis room where he stayed, where he slept, where he lived for a couple of months in the Brunewald, and went over with my mates in the winter, and the lady, her name was Rita, and she says, "Now, good night, go to the, this is the Elvis room." I says, "Well, we arrived late in the evening, so we're going to go for a few drinks." "What? You drink? Elvis did not drink. If I knew you drink, I would not let you stay here." It's true. This is like real, and the place is just as it was in the 50s, you know, but she let us out for it. She said you had to be back by 12 o'clock, went to a local hotel, and there's a couple of girls left, says, "Good night, Cinderella." But anyway, she talked to me about the Elvis spiritual side. She said she talked to him when she was serving breakfast and all, so many times Elvis talked about the soul, the existence of a soul. A lot of people nowadays don't believe we have a soul and so forth, but there's so much of a spiritual element out there, and I feel that the closest to Elvis and my mum, I lost her about 4 years ago, you know, and she was a big Elvis fan. She was in Graceland more times than me, and you learn to sing in your mother's womb, I think, you know.
It's funny, isn't it, that's what connects us. It smells, it sights, it sound, and that Elvis connection. I've got songs that are, and it's a Johnny Cash song, actually, that is a real connection to me and my mum every time I hear it. Enjoy your time away, Mark. Your Daniel O'Donnell impression is better than a German lady's impression, but you're not going to make any money doing impressions of her, so that's all good. Safe journey, and best of luck to the lads.
Thanks a million. God bless you, Paul.
God bless
Bye.
You. Take Bye-bye. Care, Mark McIntyre. Okay, we're going to play out with an Elvis song, which means I'm going to end the live stream now because we can't stream out music. So thank you very much to all of you who listen to the show, text in, watch the show. We're going to be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Of course, stay tuned because John Breslin's coming out, coming across the Northwest, around the Northwest, in fact. So here's Elvis Presley. Have a great day, everyone.
You saw me crying in the chapel. The tears I shed were tears of joy. I know the meaning of contentment. Now I'm happy with the Lord. Just a plain and simple chapel where humble people go to pray. I pray the Lord that I'll grow stronger as I live from day to day. I've searched, but I couldn't find no way on earth to gain peace of mind. Now I'm happy in the chapel where people are of one accord. Yes, we gather in the chapel just to sing and praise the Lord. You'll search, but you'll never find no way on earth to gain peace of mind. Take your troubles to the chapel. Get down on your knees and pray. Then your burdens will be lighter, and you'll surely find the way.
And you'll surely find the way.